This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, this is the 105th program of the year. The last one of this tumultuous 2020. Whew. Can you imagine? I've spoken to 200, almost 200 authors. Some authors I've given them more than a half an hour, but you know, who's counting? It's just adding up and adding up, and I'm having so much fun. And right now, I'm going to talk to somebody. I get such a kick out of his book, and I finally had a book that made me laugh out loud. And I want to welcome to Joy on Paper, Jay Bushman. Hi, Jay.
Having me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, I hear you now, Jay. Okay,
great.
This is wonderful. You know, there are so many reasons I want to talk to you. First about, of course, your new book, Novel Advice, Practical Wisdom for Your Favorite Literary Characters, given by Aunt Antigone. And this book is so funny. But I also am so thrilled to talk to you because I am an Austinite. I mean, I am.
Oh, fantastic.
I am like one of those. I am so dedicated that when I was 21 years old, I moved from northern Michigan. I had saved my money all through high school, and I saved my money, and I went to England, and I bought a house, a 400-year-old cottage near where Jane Austen was born.
Wow.
So that makes me a real Austinite. Not many people get that. I've always been so happy that it was Jane Austen that thrilled me and not Charlotte Bronte, or I'd have landed up there in the middle of nowhere in Yorkshire. So.
That's fantastic.
Isn't it wonderful? And that you obviously know Jane Austen because you wrote it tickles me every time I think about it. The Lizzie Bennet Diaries that you, there were times that I was listening to them and watching them, and I was really supposed to be doing something else. I was really busy, and I didn't care. I just wanted to see the next installment. So for anybody who doesn't know, these internet little things that are all put together in a wonderful series. It's wonderful. And of course, Emmy award winning and all sorts of award winning person that you are, you did a terrific job with it.
Well, thank you so much. And, you know, the question of what do we call these things has bedeviled us for quite a while. There have been a lot of terms thrown around. One term that we use that nobody really likes is transmedia.
Yeah, I don't like it.
From one media to another. Sometimes we use multi-platform, but what is a platform? I just like to call it a show. But for listeners who haven't encountered it, it's a modern adaptation of Pride and Prejudice where all of the characters have Twitter accounts, Facebook pages. They talk to each other on social media, and they talked to the audience on social media.
Oh.
And so we had a lot of fun weaving the story through video episodes on YouTube and then all of these social media interactions.
Well, it is so, it's so clever. It's so smart. And it's just, and the love for Jane Austen's work, and then that you've taken these characters and brought them to a strange kind of life here in America is delightful.
I can't take the full credit or slash blame for that. I was one of a whole team of really, really talented writers, directors, and more than anything else, actors were in the show who just brought this whole thing to life.
It is so fun. It is just. Now,
glad to hear that you enjoyed it.
Now, of course, you can watch one after another and not have to wait
Yes.
So so that's the great thing about it. But you're just great. You're funny, and I'll tell you,
you know,
2020. I wanted. Oh boy, it's been a crazy year, and I was so happy when I got this book because it's called Novel Advice, and you have to tell us about it because what I did, it's a series of letters written, and that really follow, you know, all literary characters. And what I did is after I got it, I Zoomed some friends and I said, okay, I'm going to read you something. Tell me.
Oh, wow.
So it became a real game with us. And I think that I don't know if you're doing a Zoom game, but I hope that, I mean, you could get so many people if you do a Zoom, get yourself on Zoom and then get people to come and listen to you read the letters. And it's just so much fun. My friends have really enjoyed this game. They'll say, oh, Zoom me. Nobody ever.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
Nobody
that
wanted
definitely,
to Zoom me before.
That was definitely an intention in writing and creating and in working with my editors and the publisher to create this as a book that you could play. The phrase that we've used a lot is it's a low-key guessing game because you can play it, you can read it as a guessing game, or you cannot if you don't want to. We definitely structured it in a way that if you wanted to play it as a guessing game, then you could. And, you know, so all of the letters are written with sort of context clues and hints for you to slowly see if you can figure out who it is. But, you know, we didn't want to make that a requirement.
Yeah, exactly.
So all of the actual characters and the source material are listed in the table of contents if you want to flip back and see and you don't want to play the game. But, Patsy, I will say, I don't know if you found this, but there is one letter in this book, and I'm not going to say which one it is, that has a secret message hidden in it.
You know, you are so clever. You are so smart. You are so, and you're just so much fun. I don't know how with my friends, I Zoom them. It's really funny. Nobody ever wanted to Zoom me before. Oh, you're boring. I don't have any. But now I Zoom somebody. I say, okay, I'm reading this to you. Listen to this carefully. I'm going to say this only once. Sort of like, hello, hello, that wonderful British comedy. I'm going to read this only once. And and then I get all dramatic and I read. And they love it. And of course, it would be nice also at some point in the near future when we can actually have parties and get together.
Yes, that would be nice. One of the things that I really regret was I was hoping to do a bunch of, you know, readings and going to the bookstores and having people and come to the readings and to be able to read some of the letters and play a little version of the game. Allowed with people, and we weren't able to do that because of everything being shut down out here in Los Angeles. So, you know, maybe once things open up again, we'll be able to do that.
And I have a feeling one of the places that this book will be a real hit is at all writers' conventions in the future. This book will be one of the great books. You know, at writers' conventions, you're always looking for something to do, something, you know, to make sort of these dinners, these things interesting, you know, to have a little bit of fun. And I can see them getting up and saying, okay, we're going to read some of these wonderful J. Bushman letters. Well, actually, they were written by people to... And, well, do you want to tell about Aunt Antigone?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, when we first were starting to discuss, you know, the structure of the book, you know, and this concept of, oh, it's going to be characters from famous literature, they're writing into an advice columnist, their problems are the problems of the book. One of the questions that, you know, first landed was, okay, that's interesting. People love reading advice columns because they love hearing about the problems that people have. But the thing that people also love about reading advice columns is the columnist. is the person who's answering the letters. What's their personality? What's their point of view? And so that was sort of a big question for me at the beginning. Like, who are all these people writing to? Why are they writing to this person? What expertise do they have to answer these questions? And it sort of, you know, the answer followed the question pretty quickly. Like, if all of the people writing in are fictional characters, should the person answering them be based on a fictional character also? And so I spent a lot of time thinking about, all right, who's gonna answer these questions? You know, I mean, could you imagine if the person writing the answers in the advice columns was, say, I don't know, Ebenezer Scrooge or Captain Ahab? Like, you're going to get very different answers. So I wanted to find someone who could approach these questions with a sense of empathy, but also a sense of learned experience of, like, yes, I've, you know, I have been through my own struggles with family, with drama, with, you know, terrible things happening. And then the thing that unlocked it for me is one of the terms that they don't use it that much anymore, but they used to use to describe advice columnists is this wonderful phrase, agony aunt. And so I was thinking about the phrase agony aunt and just the sound agony aunt and just sort of like playing with them and realize that you could rearrange some of those sounds to make Antigone from the Greek tragedy. And I was like, oh, okay. So what if it's Antigone who's lived through, you know, the story of the tragedy and, you know, having to, you know, be this exemplar of a tragic heroine. And then because it's from Greek tragedy, she goes to the underworld and then somehow she's gotten out and has lived this life where she has learned from her lessons, learned the lessons of her experience, and is now helping impart them to other fictional characters who need that help. And, you know, and it just gave me the ability to have Antigone relate to these characters in very specific ways. So, like, you know, oh, wow, yeah, you're having trouble with your father. You know, my father, they named the Oedipus complex after him. So I can understand and I can empathize. She has enough sort of lived experience to be able to relate to these fictional characters.
Well, it just clever, brilliant, that, you know, you have one of those minds that can take in a lot of different things. And of course, as you were writing this, one of the wonderful things about it is for a lot of people, they know the characters, they sort of know the names of the authors, they've heard of these things. And often times too, it is true that many people have heard of these things because they have actually seen the movie and not read the book. And I think by having these little, you know, you can just pick it up and read it. It's intriguing. First of all, for those of us who know the characters, we love it. And for those of us who, you know, friends of ours who can't quite remember who that is, I love to stump them. I love to stump them. I did this one. Okay, I'm going to read one. Okay. Dear Antigone, that's hard to say. Dear Aunt Antigone, I'm the first person in my family to go to college, and my family sacrificed a lot to send me here, more than you can imagine. But it didn't take me long to realize that I don't belong here, not at all. Harvard is no place for someone like me. It's so painfully clear, and yet my family's honor demands that I endure, no matter how much pain it causes me. Not that anyone else in the family much cares for honor. Oh, I love that. I love. I did that one of my friends. And she says, "Oh, I don't. Who's that? Who's that?" I said, "Well, you have to read the book." Ha ha ha. I've got the book. I kept saying, you know, because I had the book way before everybody. I got, you know, one of those reader's advanced copies that didn't even have page numbers on it. And I I said, "Oh, you've got to get that book. I'm not going to tell you." It's a wonderful, wonderful game to play.
I'm really glad to hear that you're enjoying it and that you're playing the game. I've most of the conversations I've had about the game element have honestly been with my mother, who reads them and then calls me up and is like, "Okay, so who is this?" And I need you. I'm doing sort of hand holding of cliff notes with my mom to guide her through all the books that she's never she never read.
Well, see, that's exactly.
Or doesn't remember.
Sometimes you don't remember. You remember the character. You're not sure who the author was. So all of that sort of blends in. It helps really to people to sort of form all of these images in their head. Because the letters are so much fun to read. Well, you see how much fun I had just reading that one little paragraph. And I could go through the book. I could read it all day long, actually. Some of my friends are saying, okay, maybe you've done enough Zooming. But, you know, I just can't resist when I get to one that I think, actually, I'm sorry to say this. I sort of do pick the ones I read to certain people are the ones that I'm pretty sure they won't remember. And then I get, but I'm not that I would do that actually deliberately, but it is fun. So you actually should announce this on your Facebook or whatever you're a media person. My goodness, you're all over the place. You know all about YouTube and stuff. I can't deal with all of this. And you could do a Zoom. You could have hundreds of people, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people Zooming in with you just to see you read these letters. And as a matter of fact, you can bring in some of those actors from... Oh, I love those actors. I'm telling you, you have those actors are so good with Lizzie. All of them. This is a real Zoom experience. This is finally, really, Zoom has been very irritating to me. I hate doing this Zoom boring, or these seminars with Zoom boring. And then I got this. And for the first time, I said, yeah, I need Zoom right now because I can't invite people over. I'd love to do like parties where, I have mostly I've always done poetry where I will have people read poetry or pull a name out of a hat and read a poem and then people have to guess. I love to do stuff like that. So this is like, this book was written for me. You knew that this Austinite needed something fun because... I am telling you, I have had so many dystopian novels this year, I cannot take it, and I'm terrified of what I'm going to get next year, because people are like, excuse me, I don't want it. And while
the writers who I know and who are friends with have all sort of agreed that none of us really want to write dystopias now.
Live in dystopia, you don't want to be in dystopia. It's sort of like being in Podunk, wherever Podunk is. Nobody ever wants to be in Podunk. Well, I don't want to be in dystopia either. So, I want something at least that interests me, something that's fun, or something that at least I learned something, which reminds me, I wanted to mention this Tiller Press who did this book for you, because they have sort of a... it's a new imprint, and they have some ideas of the type of books they want to publish.
The folks at Tiller were so great to work with, and I've seen a couple of their other books that are really, really interesting. One, if I can shout out one in particular, there's a book called The Search for the Eyeless Man, which is it's In Search of the Eyeless Man, which is a continuation of a horror podcast that came out last year called Video Palace. And so they published this book, Video Palace, In Search of the Eyeless Man, which is a collection of these urban legend type stories about this horror character, the Eyeless Man, from this this podcast, and it's really, really wonderful. And I'm not a huge horror fan, but this stuff hits me right in that right sort of eerie, unsettling kind of place. And so that's another killer book, and highly, highly recommend that one.
Well, it's a new imprint, and they say that they're going to include books on wellness, food, and cooking, dieting, parenting. Yeah. Anyway, they're going to be really creative here and come out with some really fun books to read. And they certainly have a hit here with you, because I think Novel Advice, Aunt Antigone, Practical Wisdom for Your Favorite Literary Characters, it's just so much fun, and there's so much potential. As I said, I know that if I go to a book convention, if I go to a book event, actually, when I go, one day, again, because I love going talking to writers' groups, I love going to writers' groups. I always try to think of something funny to say to them so they don't just laugh at me all the time. And I'm going to be reading. First of all, the nice thing about this book, it's a perfect gift. Anybody wants to give a gift to anybody, because there'll be certainly somebody's favorite author story will be in this book. And then it's just the right size to carry around. I can shove it in my purse. I can take it to a reader's group, a library group, and read a few and tease people because I get a kick out of it. People don't know. And I think that you should actually, I'm like on the sideline. I guess I give marketing advice. Zoom yourself. Get all of your friends from Lizzie and just do this for fun. It'll be so much. I'll be on that Zoom thing so fast you can't believe it. Because I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful book here. And Jay Bushman, Emmy-winning writer for the Lizzie Bennet Diaries. I think you're fantastic. Do you have a website you want people to go to? Yes, you do. I know. I see it.
I do, yes. My website is the, confusingly named jbushman.com, spelled like it sounds.
Yeah.
And you can see links to a lot of the stuff that I've done there. I'm pretty much just Jay Bushman on all of the various social platforms you can find me.
They can find you all over.
Thank you so much, Patsy. Like, your enthusiasm for the book is really, really wonderful to hear. I really appreciate it.
Well, it is a great book. Perfect book. I needed this. I can't tell you how much I needed something like this because it's been a rough year. But 2021 is coming up very fast now.
Yes.
And we can
only a few hours left.
A few hours left. And I want to thank you so much, Jay, for being on Joy on Paper today. You're just one vowel away from being a joy. So,
thank you so much.
You are an absolute joy. Bye bye now.
Bye bye.
Okay. Wow. Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. Are we getting ready for a week? We can either have. I'm just wondering, is Rita Moreau on yet? Okay, we're going to have Rita Moreau in a few minutes, and she's going to do a live book buzz. And she's going to be doing... Now, Jerome Pressler's Civil War Commando is one of my top picks for 2020. The story of Will Cushing, an unknown American hero, reads like a novel. I'm not sure how Pulitzer Prize winners are selected, but I tell you that I would nominate this wonderful, wonderful book, Civil War Commando, and the author, Jerome Pressler, because this book is one of my favorite of the year. And right now, we have Rita Moreau. Hi, Rita.
Hey, hi, Patsy.
Okay.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you. And I think
you
have, you're going to do a little promo for, this is one of my top three books of the year. So take it away, Rita Moreau.
Okay, here we go. Well, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with a very special book, Jerome Pressler's Civil War Commando. One of Patsy's top picks for 2020, and here's the buzz. Jerome Pressler's Civil War Commando is all true, but it reads like a novel. The story of Will Cushing is a page-turner. It is the action-packed portrait of one of America's greatest but little-remembered Civil War heroes, Commander William Barker Cushing, who sank the Confederate ironclad Albemarle in a spectacular mission in 1864. Cushing, believe it or not, has been cited by historians as the inspiration for Star Wars' Luke Skywalker, and his attack on the Albemarle called the greatest feat of arms in American military history. Well, Cushing, who was an unexpected hero, drummed out of the Naval Academy in 1861 for his erratic behavior and insubordination. His naval career was ended until the Civil War broke out and the Union needed every trained officer it could find. Will Cushing, at the age of 21, became a U.S. Navy commando and turned out to be an extremely talented naval officer. Ferocious, uncompromising, courageous, and loyal, he was sent to destroy the South's ultimate naval weapon, the Albemarle, an unsinkable vessel with a devastating iron ram. Finally, the full story of the man and his daring mission of personal revenge against an iron monster is told by New York Times bestselling author Jerome Preisler. Drawn from meticulous research and richly illustrated with photos, maps, and rare hand-drawn schematics not seen in over 150 years, Civil War Commando reveals the dramatic story of the Albemarle's creation, Will Cushing's colorful life and career, and the groundbreaking naval tactics he developed that not only saved Abraham Lincoln's presidency, but were the foundation of the modern-day Navy SEALs. One of the best books of 2020, a real-life thriller, one you won't want to miss, Jerome Preisler's Civil War Commando, William Cushing and the Daring Raid to Sink the Ironclad, CSS Albemarle, is available wherever books are sold. This is Radio, this is Radio Moreau. Okay. Ending 2020 with a bang. Radio Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper.
Okay.
Almost perfect. Okay. Almost perfect.
Thank you. We're going to commercial read on that. Bye. Bye-bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
From the pen of local storyteller Glenn Erickson comes a tale of romance and suspense. A truck driver encounters a beautiful woman fleeing in the night. Why is she running? Who is she running from? When Richard stops to help her, he has no idea his life is about to change. His quiet life as a widower is turned upside down when he discovers that Marie, as she calls herself, is really an advanced android, one who not only has escaped those who created her, but who has become self-aware. She wants to be free. She wants to live. Can Richard protect her from the corporation that claims her as their property to do what they want with her? Will Marie be able to find justice before she's captured by a bounty hunter? Android love is a new type of love story. Does an android have the right to feel love? To form an unshakable bond with a human that defies logic? The story of Richard and Marie will touch your heart and get you thinking about the world of the future. Are we prepared? Android Love, written by author and storyteller Glenn Erickson, is available on Amazon KDP.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back, and I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper Christopher Zida, the author of The Storm, One Voice from the AIDS Generation. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Patsy. Happy New Year to you.
Oh, thank you, and Happy New Year to you. As you know, I had you on just before Christmas, and I had to cut you short because I was promoting, you know, books for Christmas, but I And it was so much fun to talk to you about the storm because, as I told you, I think it is one of the best written books, certainly one of the best written books I've read this year.
Wow.
You have an amazing talent for capturing a scene and telling a story. And it's a heartrending story. It's a difficult story. It's a memoir. And of all the pain and struggles that you went through, starting from the time that you were in college, and if you want to just sort of lay that out and explain a little bit to my listeners, but I also want to remind people that this is why I wanted you back here in December. December is AIDS Remembrance Month, and people, of course, everybody's talking about the virus, and they don't sort of think of this, but I wanted you to be able to have time to tell us what you want people to know.
Sure. Well, it's a story about my upbringing and my life story in terms of my interaction with the AIDS virus at a young age and having my partner ultimately die from it in 1991. And really the way that I grew up with all of this, with the virus around me and fighting for his health care and fighting with doctors and insurance companies and family members at the same time that I was trying to build a career and all the challenges that went along with that, and then ultimately coming out in the end, rebuilding my life painstakingly and having a happy life and having a very, very fruitful career, and ultimately being able to write this book about this experience. And I think it's the book means many different things to different readers, but even though it's situated around the AIDS virus, it's really applicable to any type of challenge that somebody may be going through in their life and sticking through it and having an indomitable spirit and going forward and taking one step at a time and knowing that there could be happiness for you at the end of your struggle.
Well, it is inspirational because you are an example of the saying when, you know, when things are tough, when things are rough, the tough get going. And you certainly, you faced at such a young age, having to face dealing with all of the problems at that time, and even today they exist, with insurance companies and finding the money for the care for someone you love. And this goes across the board. People are still facing this. And of course, you also had to face the fact that AIDS was a scary thing for people. They didn't know what it was. Many people pulled away from you. And you had to find that strength to change your whole outlook on life. Here you were thinking that you were going to be a writer and perhaps imagining yourself sitting there on the beach in Malibu writing novels. And then the next thing you know, you have to go back to school and really grab onto making money.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it was definitely a very difficult decision to make in the moment. But AIDS at that point in time in 1980s was everywhere around me. And there was a lot of stigma about it because for a long time in the 80s, it was seen as a gay disease. It wasn't seen as a human disease, which ultimately it was and is. And the interesting thing is in this year of 2020 with COVID-19 virus around us, I see so many parallels to the early days of the AIDS virus, everything from people not knowing how it's transmitted to not wanting to follow the public health guidelines of wearing a mask relative to, you know, wearing condoms in the early days of the AIDS crisis, and even the politicization of it by our government. The two viruses have been politicized beyond belief, and everything, and people moving away because of the virus. I remember people moving away from Los Angeles because of AIDS, and people have moved away from Los Angeles because of COVID to go to, you know, a less populated area. So there's so many similarities that between the two viruses too.
Well, the important thing, you know, we want to take a moment to think of Stephen and to think of what a wonderful person he was. I think, why don't you take a few minutes and just tell us, because I think this is important that we honor him in that way.
Sure. Well, Stephen, I met him in my senior year at UCLA. He was 12 years older than me, and he was a brilliant man, a brilliant attorney and economist. And I just fell head over heels for him because of his intelligence. He was also very handsome, too, but I really loved his intelligence, and we had some incredible conversations together. He was wonderful to debate with, and I really, really enjoy that type of interaction with a person. And we built our life together, even though we had these 12 years between us. And he was, he had his challenges in his own life in terms of wanting to be a bit of a social climber and, aspiring to join private clubs that I would never be part of. And ultimately, when he was officially diagnosed with AIDS in 1988, he had a big turnaround and a big wake-up call and decided he was going to really change his life and he was going to just pursue education, which was really his first love. And he had a wonderful couple of years going to UCLA studying the classics, which was really his main love in life. He loved Greek, he loved Latin, he loved all that type of ancient philosophy. And he really, he left his law career behind, of course, because he was on disability, but he had the energy to actually go to class and study, and it was his passion, so he had the energy to do it, and it was interesting to see him get a fighting spirit to actually pursue what really was his passion after he had this terrible diagnosis. And he really did a lot of carpe diem living in terms of pursuing those passions for the remaining time he had on this earth.
Well, tell my listeners what you mean by carpe diem living, because it is the end of 2020. We have gone through so much, and people have been in their houses, they've been isolated, they've been frightened, they've been worried, and it's so important that we get back to living life and grabbing every day.
Right. Well, carpe diem was a strategy that we adopted after he almost died in 1988, where we just decided that we didn't know how much time he had left. We wanted to make the best of it. And so we didn't have money because we had a ton of medical bills and he was on disability. And I was still in the middle of my business school at that point in time. But we took the money that we had, and we went on very inexpensive trips to Hawaii and to Europe, and we actually just carpe diem'd even simple things like going to the grocery store, taking our clothes to the cleaners. And I think it's a lesson that I learned in that moment with him, and has really kept it in my own life ever since. And in this year of COVID, for example, as we've all been really shut in at home, other than our maybe venturing to the grocery store, I've just decided that I'm going to do certain things. Since I'm home, I'm going to learn how to cook Thai food. So I learned Thai cooking this year, which I'd always wondered how it happened. And I do love eating it, and now I actually know how to make it. There's always something you can do in your own life to bring more joy in your life, no matter what your situation is. So if we're all at home stuck, I used it to reorganize every closet and drawer in my entire house. And also reach out to people that I don't really always get to talk to. So every couple of weeks or so, I talk to an old friend or someone I have been meaning to have a call or a Zoom discussion with for a long time. And that has really helped make the year easier.
And, of course, your life is also a great success story from, people think about, can they do something? And if you are determined, you can. In your case, you had to make money, and when you did, you landed up being the chief investment officer for Disney. So I think you sort of got the right angle on that.
Yes. I mean, if for anybody who reads the book, you'll see that I had a lot of very wonderful strokes of luck in my life, too, although I did work hard at every point of my life, too. And I really... When I was in business school trying to get hired at Disney and I did my summer internship there and they agreed to hire me full time, I had no idea they were going to put me into this job where on my first day at full time working at Disney, I was working on investments that were worth almost $1 billion. And literally that was July of 1989 when in the fall of 1986, I set my writing career aside and decided to apply to business school. So three years later, I went from a writer to working on this incredible investment portfolio with this incredible entertainment company. But I always did work really hard. I think one of the things I am proud of is that I can be very focused and disciplined when I need to be, including when I wrote the book, because I do have a very intense full-time job today, and I had to really carve out time to write the book on top of that.
And I have a feeling you're going to, I already told you, you have to carve out some more time, because I'm waiting for the first novel, because one of the things, you know, always thrills me when I get a book and I read and it captures me and I see it. One of the things I like in just that little part, also tell us about the earthquake. I like that little, you know, you made Los Angeles a character in your book. You write about Los Angeles like very few people do. You capture the essence of the city, you capture the excitement, you capture the people, and of course you write about that earthquake, and that also had something to do with Stephen. So tell about that earthquake with and how those columns got to be in your office.
So I write about a few earthquakes, because it's really an L.A. history story from the 1980s to the 1990s, and we do have them periodically. And I wrote from a perspective of a native Los Angelian who, when earthquakes happen, when you're an L.A. Angelino, you do see the people who are not from Los Angeles really freak out. They really, really throws everybody for a loop. And in 1994, we had a large earthquake. They called it the Northridge earthquake. And this was where I had purchased... at the Design Center, just maybe a couple months earlier, these three Greek columns that reminded me of the trip that Stephen and I took to Greece. And they were very expensive, and I was very proud of them, and I had them on a desk in my bedroom. And then this earthquake knocked them down, and they fell on the floor, and they broke. It basically broke in half. And I thought, oh, no, this is just terrible. And then after I really looked at it, I thought, well, these are distressed columns anyway. They look, you know, all I have to do is glue them back together, and it's just another crack. So I did that, and so it's salvaged, and I have it in my office today, right by the couch, and it's funny, the glue has sort of turned yellow over the years, so it sort of highlights the cracks a little bit more than I wanted to, but it's funny.
It is. Well, that's what I love about the book. So many, of course, it's peopled with people. I mean, you talk about different people. Is there any particular story you want to tell? Because I could pull out a bunch, but...
Oh, well, there's so many interesting characters in my life that I was really excited to write about. I couldn't write about everybody, so one of the big challenges in my book was really who do I cut? Who do I not put in? And when I did my final edits, I actually took out a character and I cut 20,000 words because... I wanted it to be an easier, shorter read. It was a little bit too long, in my opinion, before that. But my favorite character really is my friend Jesse, who was this incredible socialite, Los Angelian newspaper heiress who was a friend of Stephen's. And she was really this only person of this country club set that I really liked and bonded with. And she came back into my life at two really critical points. One was when our friends were dropping us, and Stephen and I were feeling more and more ostracized, and she just inserted herself in the situation, and she told me she knew that we were a gay couple, and she didn't care, and she didn't care that Stephen had AIDS, and she was going to come over and visit him and be his friend, and she really gave him a lot of hope at that point in time. And then later in life, after Stephen had died, and I was having a very hard time just getting out of bed to go to work in the morning, she gave me another bit of advice, and she said, you have to take care of yourself, you have to choose happiness, and you have to live, you have to choose to live again, and really was a critical person for me at those two important junctures. And it's an interesting life moment, because you never really know who is going to serve as a mentor for you in a moment, and a mentor doesn't have to be someone you worked for years and years and years. It can literally be a person you don't know that well who just says the right thing at the right time and it resonates with you and gets you to move on a new course. And that's what I really love and appreciate about Jesse.
Well, I think the book is wonderful. Your writing is fantastic. And the book is called The Storm, One Voice from the AIDS Generation. It's by Christopher Zyda. There's so many reasons to read this book, and one of them is that it really depicts the 1980s, particularly in Los Angeles. And for any author who's writing a book, if you want to sort of conjure up the 1980s again, this is a wonderful book, and it's inspirational. And Chris, I'm really honored that you were able to come back on Joy on Paper today, and just to help, I'm just really thrilled. Thank you
for having me on twice. I feel very honored, and I wish you the happiest of New Year's as you can, considering the circumstances, and hopefully by the end of 2021, all of us can be out and about and having a much better quality of life.
Okay, and by the end of 2021, I feel that you're going to announce that you have a novel coming out. So...
Okay. We shall see. And thank you so much for being such a cheerleader. I can't tell you how much it means to me, being a first-time writer, to hear such positive feedback from someone like you.
Thank you again, Chris. Chris Zyda, he is a joy to talk to. And the book is The Storm, One Voice from the AIDS Generation. Everybody, you should read this book. Bye-bye now, Chris.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay. Wow. Can you imagine? There... Wow, he's amazing. The book is beautifully written, very, very touching, very inspiring, because he's an inspiring person. He's an example of what you can become when you want to become something. And, become the chief investment officer for Disney and being able to play around with $4 billion, that's pretty good. And I was really thrilled that... I was able to have him back before the end of the year. And now, a couple of things. I want to say, you know, there are characters that just grab you and characters that change you. And when an author develops a character, writes a character that is so strong that you are always... with that character at some place in your life, you can draw that character into your mind and take strength from it. Just like I, know Jane Austen's books practically, some of them by heart. I can just sort of sit myself down and go back into that world. But there are certain characters that mean a great deal to me, and that I find strength from them. And one of them, a character that I came across this year, and it was really very, very magical for me, and unexpected, and I've spent a lot of time with this character because I have been listening to the Audible book over and over. I've listened to it maybe a half dozen times because I find the character so strong and so reassuring. And that is a character created by Peter Riva, and his name is Mbuno. And Mbuno is a African guide on the east coast of Africa. And Peter just created this character. I know he's a character. I know Mbuno is a character. But Mbuno is a person to me. I feel like I know him. I feel like I could go... jump on an airplane if I could fly, and go and see him, and I would feel better for doing it. I would feel stronger. I would feel happier. And the first book where he appears is called The Tribal Rumble, A Safari Campfire Tale, and it's written by Peter Riva. And Mbuno is so strong. He's wise. He's calm. He's everything that you need at some point in your life, a guide, a real guide, a guide to thinking, a guide to hoping, a guide to believing in something. And I really cannot recommend any book higher than I can recommend A Tribal Rumble. It's really a novella. Peter went on to write and use Mbuno in many of his books, thrillers, including Murder on Safari and Kidnapped on Safari. Great books, but still for me, The Tribal Rumble is the best. And I hope that you will you know, take some time, read it, and then get the Audible version, because the Audible version is also narrated by Hakim Kai Kazam. Kazim is wonderful. Anyway, that's my recommendation for the end of this year, and it is almost the end of this year. Whoa, 2020. One of the best things that happened to me in 2020 was getting to just talk to Haley Woolbright. And her song, Boxcar, really has been, it's my on my playlist. I listen to it every morning, and I love Boxcar. And in a minute, when I go out of the show today, and we'll play Boxcar. I'll give it a few minutes so that we can play as much of it as possible. This is a wonderful song. If you are the kind of person who needs a little perk in the morning, to put this song on makes you really, the lyrics are great, the melody is great, and Haley is going to be back on in February, and Lang Martin Jr. is also going to be joining me, and of course he is one of the greatest songwriters there in Nashville. So I'm looking forward to having both of them on, and we're going to have a special Valentine's Day program in February, and they will both be singing, and they will both be talking about their love for writing music, because, you know, as you know, one of the joys of life is writing, whether it's a book or a song. And I'm going to go ahead and just, let's play this song out, and it's just a wonderful song. Happy New Year to everybody. Be strong. Let's be safe. And hopefully 2021 will be better.
I've been stowed away on this boxcar for quite some time.